Welcome to life on Earth. Welcome to life on Earth. Welcome to life on Earth.
Whoa, was way louder than I expected. And that's good. It should have been louder than expected because this is a special event, a special episode.
Yay!
Last week, y'all out there in ARC UK land, in Ayn Rand land, had the opportunity to meet some of the best people you already know from the channel and maybe some people you don't. We had Daniel Krause on, the producer, the man behind the scenes for a short segment.
Woo-hoo.
That ain't enough. We need a whole episode. So let's do this. Daniel Krause, welcome to Life on Earth.
Hey, Robert.
It is good to see you here with us. Now, today is Thursday, June 2nd. Always got to put a timestamp on because I'm one of those narcissists who listens to his own stuff afterwards. Thursday, June 2nd, 2022, our 51st episode of Life on Earth. It was actually a one-year anniversary on YouTube last Friday. So this is special stuff.
Yes.
And we are glad, Daniel, that you are here with us today. Now, for folks who missed that episode or don't know, Daniel Krause is the man behind the scenes, the producer. And not just of this show, but every show that you see on the ARC UK channel. And that's a show every weekday. And multiple shows on some days.
Yes,
he is the man behind the scenes.
He makes it happen. Daniel is the person who makes it happen.
That's
he
right.
He is so amazing. And he's like all the way around the world. He's not even in London. He's somewhere else.
That's right.
He's a man of mystery.
We need to talk about that.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, you gave us a little bit of your story, your Ayn Rand origin story last week. But I need to ask you, how did you first encounter the works of Ayn Rand?
Do we want to also go to the what happened like before, like coming?
Yes. I want as much of the story as you are willing to give us.
Yes, tell us everything.
We are curious, and that means everybody out there is curious too.
So, yeah, I think it was, how old am I now? So about 4 or 3 years ago, I was still kind of discovering atheism because I live in a very conservative and religious country. And that actually wasn't as healthy for me because I became very cynical, and I actually managed to find some of the essays I had to write around that time. And if I met someone who wrote the way I wrote then, I would be like, this is a absolutely obnoxious guy and I don't want to deal with him at all. Mm-hmm. So
maybe a better gateway drug might be, say, a parody artist who's a little bit cynical, but who's an objectivist.
And
somebody's like that out there. I'm not entirely sure who's out there.
And around that time, I actually did, because, I spend my time on YouTube, and I found these random songs, which are like parodies of famous songs. I loved all of them. And first, I had no idea all of them are connected. Like, I just saw this one random song and this one random song. I liked all of them. And then because I liked one song a lot or something, I clicked on the channel and I'm like scrolling through and wait, he made this song and he also made this and he also made this. And some of you might know that was Raqqa. I discovered Raqqa I would say first-handedly, like I didn't, just discover him and then watch all his stuff. I literally just found his stuff randomly all over the place. And then it came out in, then I came to one place where all of his stuff is. And I think very soon after I discovered his channel, I saw his interview with Dave Rubin. And I knew Dave Rubin for some time because I was kind of interested in the kind of American political scene. So I knew people like Dave Rubin, Sargon of Akkad, well, he's more UK. And generally people like that. So yeah, I watched his interview and I was really surprised by this parody artist is talking about philosophy. I don't think I was interested in philosophy at all beforehand. So I was really, and he spoke with such a passion, and it was such a combination of him like Raqqa kind of being Raqqa, but also having this philosophy, like Dave Rubin always wanted to jump in, well, what does objectivism mean for other people, or how do we convince other people? And Raqqa was always like don't talk about other people, just take my hand and together we can find Atlantis. So kind of the way Raka is. And he also talked about Jerome Brook. So I immediately checked. I think at the time, both of the Jerome Brook's interview were on Dave Rubin. So I watched both. I found Jerome Brook. And actually, a really funny thing that happened also is Jerome Brook sometimes talked about Leonard Peikoff, and I had no idea who Leonard Peikoff is. And And I didn't even know how to spell Peikoff, so I couldn't even find anything about him. So so Peikoff, for a while, Peikoff was this like mythical being almost, because here is Raka. I respect Raka, and Raka has enormous respect for Jerome Brook, and Jerome Brook has enormous respect for Peikoff. So he was really, he seemed something else almost. And yeah, then for a bit, I kind of, I read Fountainhead, I read Atlas Shrugged. I think my first kind of contact with other objectivists was on random Discord groups, which is probably the worst place to meet other objectivists. So definitely don't recommend that.
Oh, I don't know. Facebook might be the worst place.
Twitter is the worst place.
Oh, it's Twitter's the worst
place. You know, argue over who's more toxic out there.
Yeah. So when you first discovered Ruckus parodies, and you were cynical, and you weren't, you know, you're entirely sure what to make of the world at the time. And did you find them funny? Did you find them terribly offensive? Did you find them clever? Did you find, you know, what, you know, how did that, you know, shocking, you know, seed that entered your mind, how did that develop?
It's hard to say what exactly, because, you know, it's kind of abstract. So you don't always know what you like about it. So, yeah, it's hard to say what exactly attracted me. I think it's this. I think the reason why it's funny is because, you know, it's a song everyone knows, and everyone knows it's going in a certain way. And then because it's a parody, it like twists in unexpected ways. So I think that's kind of what makes it funny. Like you have no idea where it goes, and yeah, it can. I think that's it. Like,
just well, that's funny. Cool. And now you say that you didn't actually think in philosophical terms before objectivism, but I mean, did you ever find yourself, you know, thinking, you know, more abstract or deeper thoughts, you know, even if you were cynical? Did you start, you know, were you interested in other people and how they thought, or maybe psychology, or maybe politics and in that kind of way?
So,
or were you, yeah.
Yeah, I was interested in politics because I remember I was a libertarian before even discovering objectivism. So, but because I think there's this weird connection of libertarianism and cynicism, I was also very much supportive of alt-right politics, which almost seems like these two things should go against each other, like, you know, libertarianism, pro-freedom, and alt-right, the kind of right-wing populist thing. But I think if you are kind of cynical, those two will go together very easily. And they can, like, I rationalize the hell out of, like, despite being like pro-liberty, like libertarian, I rationalize supporting the Slovak, basically fascist party. So it shows how if you don't have actually any proper philosophy and you only have this kind of tingling politics, that will not give you enough to actually
have a
proper understanding.
No, I think I understand what you're saying. I mean, when I was a teenager before Ayn Rand, you know, I was a Nietzschean existentialist punk rocker. And at one point, you know, when I was like 15 or 16, I considered myself to be a communist, or somebody, you know, somebody who was more sympathetic to that idea that, you know, you need to have like a top-down ideology to kind of teach people the good life and the way to be. You need to teach morality to people by, you know, inflicting you know, going violating their rights, you know, through politics. And if you shake them up, you know, maybe you shake them up, and then they'll start getting it, and they'll start understanding how they need to treat each other. You know, so yeah, I mean, I understand those kinds of rationalism, you know, rationalizations. Yeah,
I was definitely at that kind of level where when you think, oh, and I think it comes out when, because, okay, I'm not going to be humble. I think I'm smart. I'm like more like smarter than average person. And I think because of it, and because when you like excel, and I think even Ayn Rand talked about it a bit, that she was like so much ahead of other people that she never had to make an effort. And, you know, she resolved it in a better way, and she still tried. But I kind of became cynical, like, why do these people not get it? And it's like, and I think because of how little experience you really have when you are young, and it's only, well, I'm smart, and these people just don't get it. It makes it very easy to kind of jump to any sort of authoritarian collectivism very easily, because you think, well, you know, some people are just not smart enough to actually live their lives.
Right.
Yeah, they're just not going to get it without a heavier hand. Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah, and that you know, you don't even have to be a communist, like a evil communist, to believe that. I think of the actor Jackie Chan, who made some statements with regard to Taiwan and how, you know, they should be, you know, taken over by China, because they don't know what's good for them, and China does. And and you know, people are not ready for freedom. they're not ready to live their own lives. So, you know, why not, you know? So yeah, it can come in many forms, that whole idea that they're justifying that there are people out there who are, that it's appropriate for other people to tell people what to do, and to force them into situations, and to force them into living the good life, whatever that may mean. And, yeah, then it kind of goes down, you know, worse levels. And then you've got people who are like, well, you know, we just, you know, these people are corrupted by bad ideas, therefore we need to kill all the intellectuals. You know, just, you know, like in Cambodia. But yeah. So, but no, I totally get it. And you think of these abstract things. So yeah, you certainly had a very intelligent foundation, even though, you know, you were, your premises were not that, you know, were not quite reality based at the time. So mine weren't either at the time. Yeah, that's great that you, you found Raqqa.
And yeah. And, you know, I actually thought about it, and Raqqa was kind of the only way I could ever find about it, because I wasn't interested in, I mean, we might talk about era later, but you know, objectivism has no presence in Slovakia where I live. So I mean, well, actually Jurongbruk was in Bratislava, the capital, some time ago, but even that, there's no way I would have heard about it, let's say, now. So it had to be some other way of finding it. It couldn't be through an intellectual way. It could only be through an entertaining, or maybe if I found Fountainhead, and I read it, and maybe I would have like tried to pursue more. But even that's maybe questionable. I mean,
it's been kind of extraordinary being associated with the ARCUK and seeing just how many people are coming through either Raqqa and the music of Raqqa Raqqa Ali and Mark Pellegrino, mm-hmm. and the Supernatural fan base. And even, of course, you know, Jonathan Honig and the people who know him from Money Talk and the CNN and other cable shows that he's been on. And it's really fun to me, having come in strictly through reading The Fountainhead and then contacting the Ayn Rand Institute and then going through what I think of as the normal channels, And now talking to you, I realize, well, that's those aren't the normal channels anymore. Or rather, they're, you know, that's one way, but there are so many other ways to come in. Now, was The Fountainhead the first book of Ayn Rand's that you read?
Yeah, that was the... well, actually, I have it, right? This is... And you maybe not even recognize this. What's it called?
The cover there.
I do.
Yeah. Okay, because I think that's a UK version or something like that.
It is.
And yeah.
Yeah, Dominique and her car when all hell breaks loose.
Atlas Shrugged is here, of course.
Ah, yeah.
The yes, I've got artwork. That. I've got that when we went to Paris and I picked it up. Yep.
most excellent. Do you have a favorite work by Ayn Rand?
Yeah. Good Copy and Ideal would have to be the top.
I like hearing that because I love the early Ayn Rand. I love that collection and some of the gems in there. You know, that you get a little more, you know, it feels kind of behind the scenes, you know, Ayn Rand's spirit in a little different flavor than you got from her novels. Yeah, especially Good Copy because it's so lighthearted.
Yeah.
And I think we need more of that in objectivism. Do you have a preference for fiction or nonfiction?
Actually, before that, I kind of want to mention Good Copy again, because, when I read it, it gave me something that like almost like like there was one specific thing that it gave me that none of the other works gave me. And it was this kind of, oh God, if only we lived in rational world or like world where objectivism is kind of the norm. So Ayn Rand could write all of the just Good Copy kind of stories instead of having to kind of write these big things such as Atlas Shrugged and Fountainhead. Despite how good they are, there's something about Good Copy and those kind of stories. You know, I have Lee Child all over there with Jack Reacher. And those are kind of similar, like these just... You know, just one character kind of was like having fun, just going with their lives, and you know, it's all about their actions. I don't know even how to describe it, but there's something I really like about those kind of stories.
Yeah, well, you hit on something really important, and we could easily do a show about it because all four of Ayn Rand's major works, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, We the Living, and Anthem, these are the kind of books that will save the world if enough people read them and get the message. And they're great works in and of themselves, but you're right, they're enormous. They're big issues, big topics, you know, individualism and political economic freedom. And even a story like Ideal is, you know, it's got quite a message, quite a moral to it. But Good Copy makes me think, you know, when Ayn Rand got older and talked about, well, is she going to write any more fiction? And she had started the ideas of a story called To Learn Dieterling. And it was going to be the kind of story she always wanted to write once the world was better. Once in a better world, here's the kind of story you would want. And it's really interesting that you point that out, Daniel, because you're exactly right. Good Copy also is in that category. It's not trying to save the world. There's not even, you know, kind of a theme in there of trying to save the world or solve all the philosophical problems of the ages. So I do appreciate that you are particularly drawn to that story. And I think I am for the same reasons. It's not even a morality play. Think of, you know, like Think Twice in that same early Ayn Rand collection, which still has that, you know, we've got to save the world from the altruists and the do-gooders and for the individualist. And you're right, Good Copy is just the kind of story you write when those issues are resolved, or at least you're not trying to resolve them and you're just writing a story worth reading for its own sake.
Yeah, I think what you said about... Yeah, I think Good Copy kind of... When you read it, it kind of implies, Well, we are already living a good life, so there's no need to write these big stories. So maybe that's what kind of attracts me to this. It feels like, well, we are already living on Earth. We are already in this world where everything's good and we can just enjoy ourselves.
I know before we came on air, we were talking about, you know, Ayn Rand fan fiction. And I know. But just imagine, you know, sitting around with your friends and trying to come up with, you know, what would happen if. So what would happen if, say, you kind of added more content to the story of Dagny and Francisco when they were teenagers? You know, the tennis match, the running to the tree, the summers with Eddie. I mean, it would be such a wonderful coming of age book for young, maybe even younger readers. You know, when they, first fell in love with each other, when, Francisco would be out working for, I think, for Hank Reardon in the ore mines or something like that. And then you'd have, then you had Dagny, you know, working as a signal operator or something like that, you know, when she was 15 or something. And, and Francisco would go to her work and wait for her. And I mean, there's so many wonderful coming of age stories in Atlas Shrugged or in The Fountainhead that you could kind of expand out on. Or say, for instance, what if Cheryl figured out earlier what was happening with James Taggart and she left him, and then her and Dagny became very good friends, and what would you see from there? You know, would Cheryl start working for Dagny? Would Cheryl end up in the valley, you know, all having a lovely dinner party with everybody? You know, or what if, at the very end, Eddie Willers is found, you know, he's, John Galt and Francisco and Ragnar are all there in the plane and they're looking for him and they find him and they get him and they bring him back. And what would happen then? Who would Eddie fall in love with in the valley, for instance? You know, you can take these little pieces of what's going on and, you know, you might expand it. You may have to stretch, what Ayn Rand first wrote about it and change it. But it'd be so fun.
Yeah, I guess not to stay too long on this topic, but I think I'm definitely one of people who understand why, you know, Eddie kind of had, like, his ending had to be left open. And I think it's actually good that he... Well, it's not that he wasn't saved. It's that we don't know what happened to him. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good thing that it happened that way. But yeah, if it was a more lighthearted story, then, yes, you know, it would obviously end the way. And, you know, and most people take it that way, that they just came after him. But I think there is a good reason to be left open.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I'm just thinking out loud here how fun that would be.
The only thing I would say about all that is I will repeat what Lisa Van Dam mentioned during the first of the Fountainhead discussions in the Ayn Rand Fiction Club. And I will say that in the context of Ayn Rand Center UK, which is currently being helped out by Bonnie, who's in with a diamond contribution on the Super Chat. Thank you, Bonnie. Apollo Zeus is in for £2 and says, thanks for your work behind the scenes, Daniel.
Ooh.
And thank you for that contribution, Apollo Zeus. And Mary Aline, the doyen, the
top. She's the real queen. They're
she's
talking
the queen
about the queen
of
England
UK
in
chat.
The chat, but no.
Yes.
The queen is Mary Aline.
Is also in on the Super Chat. Now, folks, you know your Super Chats. And maybe you don't know, some of you, Super Chats do go to support the Ayn Rand Center UK and the employees of the Ayn Rand Center UK, the people who do the work behind the scenes. So it couldn't be more appropriate that we are speaking to Daniel Krause today. If you're not a member already, all you need to do is go to aynrandcenter.co.uk, click membership at the top, become a member. There's four different levels too, for as little as £10 a month, but there are higher levels as well with extra perks. you should be a member. Also, there's a YouTube membership just for ARC UK. If you click at the top of the chat, you can join that or go to the ARC UK, just click ARC UK and go to our page and you can become a member of the channel. You see, if you look in the chat, these little extra icons that you see, the little green or yellow or orange icon, depending on how long you've been a member, hey, it makes you special. You can be like me because you notice I have that too. There are even some clever and humorous and charming emoticons that are available to you, but only if you are a member of the YouTube channel. So,
oh, and thank you, Jennifer, for $5.
Jennifer is in with a super chat too.
So great. Oh my gosh.
Jeff is in with $10 Canadian as well. This is going to be a good day on the super chat. So I'm going to jump forward to a question that comes a little later in my list of questions because it relates.
Is this related to Lisa, what Lisa Van Dam had to say?
Oh, that's right. I have to finish what Lisa Van Dam said, which was, for all of these charming and interesting discussions that we can have, our sort of quote unquote fan fictions, if it didn't happen in the books, it didn't happen. Now, during the discussion, you know, it's very easy to speculate. Well, maybe what Ayn Rand meant when Kent Lansing came on the scene was, and Lisa very nicely said, well, you know, that's all good and fine, but when you're doing serious analysis of a work of fiction, it's all too easy to say, well, what Ayn Rand must have meant was, and that is something you want to be a little bit careful about. So I know, Amy, you love your fan fiction.
Well, no, I would say this, it's not fan fiction that I love. It's, getting together with friends and speculating.
Yes. And spending more time.
You don't have to write it down.
And some of the best discussions have grown out of this. Most of us have heard, for example, Andrew Bernstein has explained much about both The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. He regards Atlas Shrugged as the greatest novel in world literature, but The Fountainhead is his personal favorite. I feel the same way about that myself. And, or at least it's the book I identify with more. I want to be Howard Roark when I grow up. But Andrew Bernstein is the first person to say, if you've got this situation, here's what's going on. We can talk more about that another time. But real quick, because Jason Adams, the man behind Objectivists Matters, is in for $5 and says, I'll take a special.
Thank you for the super chat there.
So what I wanted to jump to, just because the super chats are coming in and we want them to keep coming in, is that ARC UK is not a non-for-profit corporation. The organization is run by Rosie Ginsburg, the man behind the scenes, the Lord and Emperor of all things ARC UK. But you too, Mr. Krause, are an employee of the ARC UK. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yeah.
And so anybody who is super chatting, you are helping to pay the bills, keep the lights on, make all the machines work, all the fancy electronics that you see Mr. Krause using there behind the scenes. Now, how long have you been a formal? I know you've been associated with the organization for a couple of years, right? But how long have you been employed and working with Rosie?
Well, associated in a way that I supported ARC UK. And, you know, I attended a lot of, especially the fiction book club.
Yes. But
yeah, I think it about 3 months. I think it's something like that.
Now, do you have an official title, like a job title?
It's actually a funny thing because, you know, when I slowly started overtaking after the previous producer, Dylan, I had to write to all the hosts of the show. And, you know, I didn't want to just write, hey, here's the Zoom link. So, you know, you have to introduce yourself. So how do I introduce myself? And yeah, kind of producer, that's what the title of the episode, it kind of became my title. I guess it's pretty close to what I do. I think technically I do more than just producing.
You are vice president in charge of operations.
Yeah, well, Lord Prince behind the scenes.
Yeah, you have all of the roles, producer, director, engineer.
Yeah.
I've talked before about how, you know, we do a Sunday podcast that we run and we've got to do everything ourselves and we multicast it to Facebook and YouTube. So we've got 3 computers running and all this stuff. And when we go to do this show, we've got lights and screens and things so we can monitor the super chat and all that, but we don't have to do any of that. You've got it all behind the scenes. All we've got to do is get on a Zoom call and this show could happen. And so you are definitely both the producer, the director, and the engineer.
Yes.
But that's I like that. If you've adopted that as your official job title and, as producer, I think that's exactly right.
You know, make sure you mention graphic designer. You know, you make the thumbnails, you know, so.
Do you do all that yourself or do you farm any of that out?
Well, yeah, I do all the thumbnails, although some of are just reusing what we, because, for example, Enjoy Parenting, that's, we use the same template. So we, you know, we keep on reusing that.
Yeah, I know Dylan set up a lot of those when he was working behind the scenes. So I'm sure some of them are still from there. I just didn't know if you, do you do Photoshop or is that all?
Yeah, I use Photoshop for all the, all the daily objective things are from scratch.
Well, that's impressive to me. Amy knows Photoshop. Yes. I don't. It's all, I try to go into Photoshop and I'm lost. So that's very cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And it's definitely an interesting thing to do because you don't always know. And I kind of had this problem at the start. It's like, you don't know what you want to do really. But I realized you never want to be paralyzed by the idea that you don't know what you do. So usually when I don't know what to exactly do, I just start doing random things and it kind of starts putting itself together. So, you know, find this picture, try to see how it works, how the, this background works. You kind of, there's no real plan that, you know, you always do it in this way. And actually, whenever I see that the thumbnails are too similar, then I know I have to like start again and start remaking them because, you know, and you can see it actually in thumbnails, like the first ones were very similar. So then I changed them and then there was a certain pattern, then it's changed again and again, certain pattern. And I'm always trying to stop. I want to like make unique titles and also, you know, there's certain kind of creativity and I also want to be funny in some of the thumbnails. For example, I know there was yesterday TDO with Jonathan Honig and that was about the guy who tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And, you know, my subtitle on the thumbnail was "Don't Let Him Go," which to me is the most funniest thing I ever did on the, as a thumbnail.
Yes. That was awesome. Hilarious. That was, of course, all the long time objectivists are thinking, don't let it go. That was an Ayn Rand essay title. That's right. Don't let him go. Mm. Yes. That was very clever.
That was very clever. And the party hats that you put on us for our last show was really cool. That was funny I really too. Liked that a lot. It was very nice. Very, it wasn't like overly done. It was well-placed. Very good.
Yeah, I think, I know you say, well, you sit down and you figure it out, but I'm going to need Amy to help me with Photoshop. I figured out Pro Tools on my own that way, just working my way through it, you know, in the music studio, but Photoshop, you guys are way ahead of me. Real quick, Jeff Bannister is in with a super chat. Now, this is the member super chat. If you are a member, every month you get a free super chat. It just comes up and you get to type something in that you wouldn't normally get to type.
Yeah.
And Jeff, who was already in for $10 Canadian, put in, join ARC UK. So what better to use your membership promo than to tell other people, come on, get on board with that. Excellent. So you, again, we've been calling you the producer and you know that we do that because you are both the producer and within objectivism, that's really an honorific associated with one of the top seven virtues, which
which
you certainly deserve for keeping things running.
And what I'm hearing from you when you were describing, you know, how you, what your process is in terms of just making thumbnails. I mean, this is one thing. I mean, you are very conscientious about making something that you like, that you're passionate about, or that makes you smile in that way. So you're not just, you know, saying, okay, what's the least amount of work that I can do and get by. No, you're actually developing your own standards, your own first-handed view of what you want and what you find you can do to make what you're doing worthwhile to yourself and also, you know, put it up against the standards of what's going to communicate and what's going to perhaps be a little funny or be clever or stand out and help promote ARC UK a lot better. So you really have from what I can tell, a very, very excellent work ethic, and you apply creativity to your work. So yeah,
if I can boost ego of someone, I definitely have to mention Don Watkins, because I don't remember everything Don Watkins said, but he said one thing at the, one of the communication boot camps that stuck with me. And it's not even like really his thing, but I think the way he kind of explained it was, and it's like, and it was like the first rule of when you're making a speech, but I think it applies to everything, and it's define your audience. And I think that really helps with any kind of creating or any work, you know, whatsoever. Because, you know, when you have a, well, make a thumbnail, doesn't always know what you want to do. But I always have like the two kind of focuses, and one focus is too objectivist, which, you know, the title Don't Let Him Go would be like, that's a specific thing that only objectivists will probably get, like why that's a thing. And, you know, sometimes it's more, and it's especially when the topics are kind of, you know, for example, Jordan Peterson, then you want to be as in your face and as kind of almost clickbaity, but, you know, kind of attractive, like, oh, I want to click on this. Mm-hmm. And I've became more aware of when I'm on YouTube and when I click on something, why am I clicking on something? And I try to also pay attention to that, like what makes me click and might make other people click too.
Well, that's good, because we talked about this recently. I had a conversation started on Lee Pearson's show, especially the after show for his episode this week. And then I talked to Jay Connie after that. And the topic of not irreverence, but, you know, that bit of lightening up, that bit of humor that hasn't always been there in the organized objectivism. And so objectivism, and I got an echo going there. And so I especially appreciate that there's a bit of humor and even mischievousness, which I guess you couldn't help but have once Rukka Rukka Ali becomes an objectivist intellectual. I think it's a really good thing for the philosophy, because those of us who are a little more uptight don't lose anything by having those who aren't in the same organization or on the same shows and having these conversations. I think it's important that we can variety, that we can do
yes.
that.
Yes, different personalities and variety is the spice of life. Yes.
Yes. And I see that Carolina has joined, has become a member on
Yay,
YouTube. Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome.
The more of that, the better. Good to see you there. And if you click your little emoji, your little emoticon icon, you'll see that there are now emoji that you can access that you couldn't access before. Mary Aline is also in for another $5 to say thanks for doing a great job, Daniel.
Yay!
And she says it was great to meet you in London.
Yeah, it was so good to meet you. Ah.
Now I could jump forward to that. Where was I now? About Ayn Rand Con. Oh, there it is. First of all, were there any high points for you that stuck out during your visit to London for Ayn Rand Con? This was just, what now, 2 months ago? Has it been that long?
2 months.
It seems like only yesterday that we all met up in London. What was your favorite part of that, or parts of that?
So I'm going to we'll see how long we are going to stay here. But I'm going to mention one thing, and some people that I've met there might actually not even know of this, but I went to my first musical in London, at all. And it was the Book of Mormon. So I went with some people from, not from London, but some of the people I've met in London to the Book of Mormon.
That was very good. I saw it. Robert hasn't, but it was surprisingly heartwarming and very funny.
So I assume you enjoyed your first musical?
Yeah, it was great. But you know what? I mean, it was great overall. I love to walk around the city. It was London. It's very interesting city. Walked all over the place, and I had a lot of also kind of spiritual, let's say, things that happened to me. And one of them was that I went to, I think it was National Gallery, and actually I, you know, it's all the great art. And interesting thing, or well, like none of the art actually made me feel anything. So that was like almost, you know, something wrong with me. But I actually met with I actually randomly met someone else who was also there from Ayn Rand Con. Okay. And we talked for a bit about, and he was someone who spent hours there and was like, oh, all this great art. And he kind of made me realize, you know, just because you don't have, you know, you shouldn't beat yourself over it, that you don't have a reaction to art, especially paintings, because I think painting is very abstract and it's kind of hard to really understand. So, you know, yeah, don't beat yourself over it. And yeah, and the rest of the time I spent there was a bit better, because I wasn't stressing myself or why am I not feeling anything? Am I nihilistic or something? I have no reaction. So yeah. I kind of enjoyed it a bit more, and I kind of walked around and just looked at that. And, you know, and there was actually one painting which actually made me a bit fuzzy, let's say, because I don't know what to even call it, this kind of reaction to paintings. So very new to
paintings. I'm very happy, I mean, to know that you found somebody who gave you some visibility and reaffirmed that you need to see things in a first-handed way and to use your own individual judgment on things and not to beat yourself up because you're not responding like everybody else's. I think that's awesome. That is awesome that you found somebody to remind you of that and to reaffirm that, because sometimes that doesn't happen, and it can turn out to be very sad and can really stunt a person's ability to develop who they are and what they like and what their values are.
That's interesting, because I thought if we had time, and then I realized we're not going to have time, but I was going to ask you this question. In 2 weeks, I'm going to do an episode on essential tips for objectivist newcomers, newbies. And I've got a list of these tips for newcomers to philosophy, newcomers to objectivism. And I was going to ask you if you had it, because I know you've been in the philosophy for years now, but you know, compared to a lot of us, you know, 3 or 4 years is still relatively new. Do you have any tips, advice that you would give other young objectivists or fans of Ayn Rand who are just discovering these ideas? And I think that's a great one, that, you know, don't beat yourself up if you don't share or respond to some specific values that other people are saying, oh, that's the greatest thing. I like that. And I would definitely want to put that on the list. Any other thoughts about tips you might give young objectivists?
Yeah, I think that's the best one. Because I don't want to just give, again, being first-handed, I don't want to give some advice from someone else. So I think that's the one that I kind of, yeah, don't be afraid to also disagree in a sense that, yeah, and some of the people might know I'm actually part of OAC, and I've become a bit more, let's say, cheeky, and I'm kind of becoming more of like, I don't have any specifics right now, but yeah, kind of, you know, why is, you know, the random, why is free will important? Why is capitalism the right way? Why is, yeah, kind of just ask questions, because that's the best way to understand.
Yes.
And yeah, be first-handed and take it, even when you accept philosophy, take it like this, like, yeah, as far as I know, I believe in objectivism. I think Ayn Rand is right. I might not have all the first-hand knowledge to really apply it everywhere. Like, you know, maybe especially if you're young and, you know, maybe you still live with your parents, all of the objective is even virtues and also ideas, you might not know that they are right. So yeah, just you can have both things. Like you can both believe in something but don't actually know it's right, but you wanna learn. And you know, objectivism is a long, like lifelong process. You're never done. Like, oh well, now I'm done, I don't have to know more, I know enough. You're gonna learn something every day. And I think it was somewhere mentioned when I'm not sure who it was, maybe it was even Robert, but someone mentioned that Ayn Rand, or was it Nikos today? Well, whatever. Someone mentioned that Ayn Rand, even in her 80s, said something like, I don't know how I was able to live yesterday without the knowledge I have today. You know, yes. That's yes. Her in her, you know, late age. And
yeah, that's Harry right. Benzwinger. Harry Benzwinger tells that story, and yes. Nikos mentioned it earlier today, that Harry had tried to ask her, you know, do you feel like you're still learning things? And it's fun the way he tells it. But you're right. You're right. Even Ayn Rand is constantly learning and having new insights. Right. And if she's approaching things first-handedly, then that's going to always happen. I really appreciate your answer to this, because you know, even more than the specifics of, well, don't beat yourself up over values you don't share, is that determination to be first-handed. Even if you're in the OAC and they're telling you, they're teaching you or training you or mentoring you, if you don't get it, you know, say, I don't get this, or I don't know if I agree with this yet. That first-handed, that honest approach is something that a lot of newcomers, you know, come in where, yeah, I think I get all of this. I think I agree with all of this.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, slow down. Make sure you're really getting it firsthand.
Yeah. And I, by the way, I didn't start with this. I was one of those people who half a year after this kind of objectivism is like advocating for it everywhere, because, you know, I know my stuff. I know why selfishness is good. And then yeah. I'm arguing probably even the other person is right, because I know so little that only thing I know is selfishness good, and I'm arguing for that. Like I know why or what it even means. So, you know, even this process of discovering that, even the process of discovering that you need to discover has to be discovered.
Yes, you know? That's correct.
That's so true.
Yes, it's a journey. And yeah, you're kind of always, I mean, you know, a good person, a virtuous person, I find, is always somebody who is self-monitoring and introspecting and you know, having to go back and asking yourself, do I need to discover more about this? Do I need to uncover more about this? And you've got, I think, you know what, honestly, I think you're on the right track, Daniel.
I hope we are.
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Now, because you are, at least right now, stationed on the eastern side of Europe, mm-hmm. neighboring Ukraine, I have to ask you, do you have any thoughts or opinions on the current Russia-Ukraine war going on?
Yeah. Well, not that much, or not much new. Although, because I'm not only that I'm living in Slovakia, which is on border with Ukraine, I'm living in the eastern part of Slovakia. So I always joke that I could run to Poland, which I could, by the way. I could right now stand up and go run to Poland, which is always funny. But I'm not that far away from Ukraine either. So we actually had, when the war started, we had a lot, even in my small village, we had Ukraine refugees. So it's very close. And it's the most kind of upsetting thing is that there are people here who support Russia. Like, you know, you see Ukrainian refugees, like you see these people escaping from their from their country and you still support the Russian regime and Putin, yeah, that's it's always kind of weird. And you
well,
know,
I mean, yeah, our you know, I'm sure we have neighbors somewhere close by who are right wing, you know, nationalist types who support Putin. And
well, of course, yeah, right now there's a former prominent objectivist who supports Putin, so
well,
no longer associated with ARI, but it is a thing that can happen. I don't understand it.
Yeah, but
I know what their logic is, but I still can't believe anybody believes that.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if we are having any, because I believe that we, I don't know if about in Michigan, but I'm pretty sure that some Ukrainian refugees are settling in the States right now. But yeah, to be so close by and to see it and to be on that side of the world and to hear from people who are not against that, the initiation of war.
Well, and is there concern that if Russia were to actually win this conflict, which seems impossible given how badly they're doing, but just look at a map of Russia versus Ukraine. Is there a concern that if Ukraine fell, would there be concern in other former Eastern Bloc countries that this is an expansionist program?
Not really, as okay. All the all the neighboring like Poland and Slovakia are all part of NATO, so okay. That kind of makes us much more secure, and even. Okay, I don't know enough about this conflict to make this claim, but I think it is kind of said that the reason why Putin attacked Ukraine is because Ukraine is in a kind of stage that it wants to join the European Union, and NATO and European Union, although not close together, they kind of go one after another. A lot of times, so you know, even if they join just European Union, that would make them connected with Europe even much more than, mm-hmm. and they definitely don't like that.
Seems so obvious that it's a desperate last minute attempt before it's too late, before Ukraine is securely part of the world community.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if I can just make one more or mention one more thing, it's also like really ridiculous that people actually support Putin to do. And I actually realized I have this idea that it's so ridiculous that when I heard someone, like I went to a store, which, you know, my store is just a couple steps away. And I went there and the people there were talking about like supporting Russia and justifying kind of Putin's moves. And I laughed. Like, for me, it's so ridiculous that I just laugh. Like, oh, you're joking. Like,
yeah,
you're not actually believing in this. Like, yeah, you can't be serious. Also, I see in chat someone wants to know where my accent is from. It's Slovak. Slovakia. Yeah.
Well, it's always good to have a plan B. In the meantime, you're coming to the States soon.
Yay!
And so anybody who's going to OCON, Ayn Rand Institute's Objectivist Conference, if you didn't go to Ayn Rand Con Europe in the UK, this is your chance to meet the producer. And my understanding was you're leaving a week early and you're touring the west side of the country first.
Yeah, as I like to say, from sea to shining sea. Yeah, I'm going to Denver, then San Diego, and then Washington.
Wow.
Do you have objectivist connections in each of these places, or are people providing you places to stay? Or
so, yeah, in Denver, it's Toscon. Mm-hmm. And then in San Diego, it's a friend of mine.
Okay.
And I'm actually also, it looks like I'm also going to go to lunch or something with James Valiant. So,
oh, good.
Also, so also there.
I know he mentioned that last week. I'm glad that's going to happen. We haven't had lunch with James since OCON 2019.
Yeah.
So we are jealous. Right there, we're jealous of you. aside from the fact that I haven't been to California in decades.
Make it a very long lunch, okay? At least it will be three hours.
It will be. Plan on a long lunch. The conversation will go until they throw you out. Outstanding. Well, before we wrap up, okay, I'm going to drop this bomb. Here's a question. Any inside information you can give us? I don't know what your next move with ARC UK is, your long-term plans, or if there's anything exciting coming up that all of us should know about. You know, as much as I'm a host of a show, I have a feeling there's like an inside there. Is there anything you can share with us about either what's coming up on the channel with the organization or with you personally?
So I have no idea how much I can share, although there is always kind of the stuff I'm doing that's kind of more long-term that I'm doing for ARC UK. And there are also a couple things. Well, I guess I can mention, like, I'm trying to build an actual site for ARC UK. Because right now, and many people might not even know, we have the objectivism.co.uk, which has the show list, like, of all the shows. And I use it because, you know, I don't remember where all the shows started at what time. So it's very helpful to me. But then we have the other site for memberships. And I want to make it into one site. So it's all together. And yeah, I guess, you know, if it's on one side, maybe more perks are coming. You never know.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear, because I'll go to objectivism.co.uk, which, you know, as you say, is a separate website, even though it might as well be part of Ayn Rand Center.co.uk. But yeah, the list of all the current shows, the schedules are all at objectivism.co.uk. Glad to hear that's going to be addressed, because as useful as those sites are, they do look kind of 2010, sort of. Like my website looks really old, and so I'm glad to hear that's a future concern. Well, we're reaching the top of the hour. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I have forgotten about?
Well, if there is, maybe people will. Wait, are we going on Clubhouse?
We are going on Clubhouse. Yes. Well, we will do a Clubhouse afterward. We've got a bit of a time budget. We might have 20 minutes or so.
About a half hour. Yeah.
About a half an hour. But Clubhouse is scheduled. If anybody in the chat, anybody listening to the show wants to talk back with money in the super chat. But besides that, you can join us in the Clubhouse afterwards. Daniel, thank you so much for letting us bring you not behind the scenes, but in front of the scenes. For all that you do, obviously the spotlight belongs on you as well. And we do appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It was really fun.